You are listening to Radio Lazaretto with your host, Ego Plum.
Hello, this is Ego Plum. I'm a cartoon composer broadcasting from my studio in Los Angeles, California, overlooking Sunset Boulevard, which is eerily quiet. We've been on lockdown for about 2 months here because of the COVID-19 pandemic. It's a really strange, lonely time. I haven't had a proper guest in my studio in about 2 months now. I was recently listening to Henry Rollins' Quarantine Radio, where he plays just all his favorite music. And it's just amazing listening to him because he's so passionate about what he loves. And I thought to myself, you know, I think I may love music as much as Henry does. So why don't I do something like that too? It shouldn't be that difficult, I think. So I decided to put together this little radio show podcast thing to showcase music from my collection. And I decided to call it Radio Lazaretto. Lazaretto because that is Italian for an isolation hospital for people with infectious diseases, particularly leprosy and the plague. So, yeah, what was I saying? Oh, yeah, a place to showcase music from my collection, the obscure, the weird, electronic, the avant-garde, absurd, and also I could share music from films, music from cartoons, basically all the stuff that has inspired me and moved me to action. And I need to say that I am not a historian. I cannot tell you the facts about the music that I'll be playing. I don't know names. I often do not know dates. Sometimes I don't even know the titles of the songs that I'll be playing. But I do know what I love and what has inspired me to become the composer that I am today. And that has to be worth something, I think. The opening song on the show was a song called Java by Andre Pop alongside the sound effects guru Pierre Fantasme, who recorded under the name Elsa Popping and her Pixieland Band. That was released in 1958 as part of an album called Delirium in Hi-Fi. I'm not sure what to say about that track, really. I just love those weird, echoey, reverse-sounding voices as the lead, and I love thinking about that coming out in 1958 and people not having any idea what to make of it. That's always fascinating to me, and I have to thank my friend Rod for turning me on to that music as well. So, moving on, I want to take you to the year 1932. In Germany, a man named Adolf Hitler is currently running for president. In the USA, Louis Armstrong just released his version of All of Me, which went to number one. Duke Ellington is on the radio. And somewhere in the city of Leningrad in the Soviet Union, researchers and musicians are developing an instrument called the variophone, an optical synthesizer, which utilized sound waves cut into cardboard discs, creating synthetic graphical sound, which was essentially made of holes cut into paper. So I'm going to play you three short tracks that were made with the variophone. And just remember, think of the year and think of this in terms of context of what kind of music is being heard around the world at that time. And in the Soviet Union, this is coming out. Wow, it sounds like it could have been out of an 8-bit video game or Super Mario World. It's simply phenomenal when you consider the year. Here's another example. No title, just variophone track number two. Check this out. That is really beautiful. Finally, I'm going to play one more. Final track that was actually used in a short animated film that was made around the same year, 1932, in the Soviet Union. It's pretty noisy, but I love it because it almost sounds like a Danny Elfman tune to me from his early days. But more importantly, it's the earliest example of electronic music in animation that I think exists. I don't know of any other. Again, 1932, music from an animated short film. Listen to this. Hey, you're listening to Radio Lazaretto with your host, Ego Plum. Let's jump ahead about 20 years, moving on to somewhere between 1956 and 1963. This time, we're visiting Dutch composer Tom Disselveldt with a piece called Electronic Movements Vibration. God, I love thinking about what it would have been like hearing that music for the first time in the 1950s or 60s. I mean, it's just, it's so alien, you know, it's just really wonderful. No discussion of electronic music is complete without talking about Raymond Scott, one of my personal heroes. I have to say something about Raymond's music and his approach, which is so unique to me. Now, we just heard that Dutch music and also the American stuff earlier, recorded in late 50s and 60s. One of the key differences between that music and Raymond Scott is that, musically speaking, stylistically, Scott's music doesn't fit in his time at all. These previous tracks could have been played, performed by a traditional 1950s band. You know, like the way they were creating the music still felt like music at the time. But Scott's music itself was a completely different animal. Like it was of a whole different time and space. If you were to just break down what he was writing structurally, melodically, his choices of melody and rhythm were years ahead of its time. The sort of a robotic, angular stuff did not come into being until decades later. And that is not even considering the sounds that he was using, because he was inventing his own instruments. So whereas I love all this other early examples of electronic music, Raymond stands in a whole different place. Listen to this. This is called When Will It End, from the posthumous album Manhattan Research Inc., released 20 years ago.
Lazaretto with your host, Ego Plum.
Okay, I want to give you another example of how insane Raymond Scott was. Okay, here's a piece of music from an album called Three Willow Park, recorded around 1961, according to the notes, to show you what he was, how his brain was perceiving music and sound. Okay, now 1961 is essentially the 50s, culturally speaking. And again, because I love putting these things in context, I'm gonna play you like what was in the top 10 this year. Listen.
I was all right for a while. I could smile for a while. But I saw you last night. You held my hand so tight as you stopped to say.
Okay, so yeah, Roy Orbison crying, right? And now in Raymond Scott's studio, same year, this is what he's doing. Up until I heard that, the weirdest electronic stuff that I had heard was probably what Devo was doing in their early hardcore days, as they called them. For contrast, I just want you to hear like a clip from You Got Me Bugged. This is a Devo 1975-ish, and it's so similar to what Raymond was doing about 15 years prior. It's so insane. Listen.
Yeah.
At the time that I heard that Devo stuff, I thought that was the craziest, most, you know, futuristic electronic music I had ever heard. But when I discovered this Raymond Scott stuff, when I finally heard that, I was like, holy shit, this guy is so ahead of his time in so many ways. But anyway, just had to share that. I'm going to play one more Raymond Scott song just for the hell of it. Check this out. That was In the Hall of the Mountain Queen by Raymond Scott from the album Manhattan Research Inc., released in the year 2000. And cool story about that song is that that was the first piece of electronic Raymond Scott music ever featured in a cartoon. Thanks to yours truly, who put that in an episode of Harvey Beaks in 2017. So that was pretty cool. So on that note, I'm going to use that to segue into a conversation about music in cartoons. I'm going to try and avoid the obvious stuff. I'm not going to talk about Carl Stalling, who did all the music for the classic Looney Tunes, or Hoyt Curtin, who did all the amazing Hanna-Barbera stuff. I'm going to talk specifically about synthesizers and electronic music in cartoons. The first time I ever noticed it was when I was watching Rugrats as a teen on Nickelodeon. I remember being shocked when I saw the name Mark Mothersbaugh in the opening credits. Today, it's easy to see Mark Mothersbaugh as the lovable character who did music for Wes Anderson films and Thor Ragnarok, and also was featured on Yo Gabba Gabba as the delightful artist. But at the time, Mark was known as the frontman of Devo, which to me was one of the most subversive, weirdest bands in music. I mean, their music videos featured children sticking forks into toasters and humans squirming in body bags while Mark sang Jocko Homo in a lecture hall. So you could see how it was shocking to see this crazy artist being in a wholesome children's cartoon. And in a lot of ways, that inspired me to pursue music for cartoons because I realized it was possible to maintain your integrity and be the weird artist that you wanted to be and still penetrate the mainstream on something like a Nickelodeon cartoon. This is the opening and closing theme from Rugrats by Mark Mothersbaugh from about 1991. Check it out. Okay, so the story behind that track is that one of the creators of Rugrats, a guy named Gabor Chupa, was a big fan of Mark Mothersbaugh's music, specifically this thing that Mark did called Music for Insomniacs Volume 1 and 2. So from what I heard, Gabor had been using the Music for Insomniacs tracks as temp music in the pilot, and he approached Mark and said, hey, I want to use this stuff for my new cartoon. And Mark replied saying, you know what, why don't I write you something original that'll be tailored to the cartoon, and the rest is history. But it's fascinating hearing music from Insomniacs because you could hear the seeds of the Rugrats music. This next track is called Hugo from Music for Insomniacs Volume 2, released in 1988, several years before Rugrats was on TV. And instantly you'll recognize it as the music that inspired Rugrats. This next song is from probably my favorite composer to have ever worked at Nickelodeon on cartoons. Someone I've admired for a long time from the stuff I've heard, and someone I didn't know until about a month ago when I finally reached out and introduce myself and proved to be very kind and generous with his time. This is a guy named Drew Newman. So I first discovered Drew when I heard the theme and closing theme to Ah, Real Monsters, which premiered 1994 on Nickelodeon. This is such a cool track. I'm going to play both the opening and closing. This next piece of music is also Drew Newman, but not Nickelodeon this time. It was for Cartoon Network when he wrote the music for the Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy. Now, I'll admit I'd never watched the show, but this ending theme blew me away, and I think it's so perfect. Check this out. Around 1991, there was a weird show that premiered on MTV called Aeon Flux, which kind of felt like sort of an anime, sci-fi type show, but it was an American show, which had really, really interesting music. Just the opening 30-second theme was just already so, wow, like I didn't know what I was hearing. The sounds felt so foreign and unusual, and I never made the connection that it was also Drew Newman who did that music, and that was in 91. Before Real Monsters and before Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy. So I'm going to play a suite of stuff that he sent me. You're going to hear the opening theme and then three cues that I just picked randomly that I really liked. This will go about 10 minutes and it's worth it because it's just a real joy to hear someone that is a master of their craft just creating this really, really cool... I don't even know what words I'm trying to find here. It's just an inspiration for me as a composer and sort of something that I wish I could do. I wish I could write like the way he does. Check this out. Wow, that is really, really cool. I love that. So anyway, Drew Newman, composer from Ah! Real Monsters, Aeon Flux, Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy. Amazing, amazing artist. But I was curious if he had done anything else beyond these shows. Had he put out his own records? Had he performed? So I went online, did some research, and yeah, I found some of his music from his own, you know, just stuff that he's written for himself or for, you know, CDs. Really, really great. These particular pieces are fascinating because each of these were written with a single analog synthesizer. So every song you're hearing, all the sounds coming from one machine that he had to dial in and sort of invent himself. First one is called Zombies versus Aliens. It's going to be followed by Tilting at Windmills. And the set will conclude with Sea Witches versus Aliens. Really, really amazing stuff. Check this out. Lazaretto. Hey, this is Ego Plum, and you're listening to Lazaretto Radio, my little podcast radio show where I'm going to be talking about music that I love, showcasing original, really cool stuff that has inspired me, stuff from cartoons, films, whatever I feel like playing. Maybe some of my own stuff if I'm in the mood. Anyway, in conclusion, Drew Newman is pretty amazing. And listening to his stuff, I was reminded of only one other composer. And I haven't asked him if there was a direct inspiration or not. But it all feels like it is sort of born of the seeds of Wendy Carlos. If you're not familiar with Wendy Carlos, please do yourself a favor and look up her work. Phenomenal, phenomenal composer. Worked on Stanley Kubrick films, The Shining, A Clockwork Orange, and worked on the Disney film Tron in 1982, which happens to be just one of my favorite things I've ever heard in film. It's just so incredible and out of this world. The first time I heard this unique combination of orchestra with synthesizers in this really weird way. I'm going to play a few tracks from the soundtrack to Tron. Tron Scherzo, Sea of Simulation, Tron Action, and then I'm going to play one final piece at the end of all that called Anthem for Keyboard, which I imagine was gently performed by Wendy Carlos. It's in 7/8 time. The most beautiful, delicate, loving piece of music that's ever been recorded in 7/8 time. You kind of could almost imagine like she's channeling Johann Sebastian Bach. You could picture Bach sitting at the harpsichord, noodling away, except this is Wendy Carlos in the future on a Moog synthesizer. It's just really, really incredible. She's on another dimension of music writing. Check this out. Thank you. While we're on the Wendy Carlos kick, I think we probably should play the music from, the main theme from Stanley Kubrick's A Clockwork Orange from 1971. So this is her reimagining Henry Purcell's Music for the Funeral of Queen Mary, which was originally composed in 1695, but then adapted for the Kubrick film. It's heart-wrenching, it's heartbreaking. It's such a beautiful song, and here are two versions of it. The one used in the opening credits when the camera is slowly panning into Alex, and a second, more playful, delicate version, which happens later in the film. Check this out.
Thank you.
Anyway, that was the great Wendy Carlos. Before that, we heard a lot of Drew Newman. I've assembled this radio show today, and today also happens to be the day that I've learned of the passing of the great Florian Schneider. Florian being one of the founding members of the pioneering electronic music group Kraftwerk. The first time I heard Kraftwerk, I was in third grade, and I had a really interesting teacher at Eastmont Elementary who one day decided, he told all the class, we're gonna turn off the light in here, make it dark. There was no windows, it was one of the bungalow classes in the back. And I want you to close your eyes as well, and I'm gonna put on a record for you. And he put on, he had a vinyl copy of Autobahn, which he put on the turntable, and he said, I want you guys to let your imagination wander. Where does this take you? It was sort of an exercise in imagination. It was really, really cool and interesting thing he did. Anyway, I didn't think about it again until about 1986 when I was 11 years old and I saw a music video on MTV for a song called Music Nonstop. It was the first time I had seen the images of Kraftwerk tied with the music, and I was blown away all over again. I don't think at the time I connected it with the Autobahn experience in the classroom, but it's all sort of, now it's all coming together. So yeah, I heard that in 86, so I was 11 years old, and I remember asking my brother to buy me the record and being obsessed with listening to that all the time. It was just something that I would put on over and over. Ever since that point, I became a huge fan, and I saw him perform probably every single time they came to Los Angeles, starting with seeing them in 1998 at the Hollywood Palladium. I was 23, and my older brother took me, and that was amazing to see because they had their entire Kling Klang studio behind them. It looked like they were launching a space shuttle, because it was just amazing. I'd never seen such a setup on a stage before. And most recently, in 2014, I saw them four nights in a row at Walt Disney Hall. I even had the privilege and honor of attending one of those nights with Jerry Casale of Devo. I couldn't help feeling that I was sort of absorbing some magic from all the musical pioneers in the room. That was really amazing and a really fond memory for me. Anyway, I'm really sad that Florian is no longer with us, but very grateful to have experienced his music in person and records, CDs, MP3s, and in my heart to this day. This is the song Music Nonstop from the 1986 album Electric Cafe.
Non-stop. Radio La Laredo with your host.